Thank you. My name is Soni Pradhanang, and I'm with State University of New York, College of Environmental Science and Forestry in Syracuse. I'd like to thank my advisor, Russ Briggs, and US EPA for funding this research. This research is a subset of a bigger research which involved watershed level monitoring and modeling for water quality parameters. I'd like to begin with this slide which shows point and non-point, I mean, the definition of pollution. The pollutants can be point source or non-point sources. Obviously, point sources are the ones that can be identified, and non-point sources, which are diffused and difficult to identify, can come from feedlots or from irrigation activities, and most of the non-point source pollutants are known to be generated from agricultural activities. This research was conducted in Skaneateles Lake watershed, which is located in central New York. It's fourth largest of the Finger Lakes and third deepest. It's about 91 meter deep, 35 square kilometers surface area, the lake only. And because of the ratio of lake draining into the land draining into the lake is small, this lake water has been ideal for drinking water, and it's a primary supplier of drinking water for the city of Syracuse. The watershed level monitoring effort was conducted by monitoring outlets of six sub-watersheds within this Skaneateles Lake watershed, and these are Harold Brook watershed, Shotwell Brook, Bear Swamp Creek, and Grout Brook watershed. These two watersheds are primarily agricultural watershed, which has more than 70% of its land use as agriculture, whereas the other two watershed, Bear Swamp Creek and Grout Brook, are more than 70% forested area. And these are also larger watersheds, so we had opportunity to monitor them upstream and downstream. The upstream watershed of Bear Swamp Creek is primarily forested. It's more than 85% forest, whereas the upstream upstream of Grout Brook watershed is mixed land use. I'd say about 50% agriculture and 50% forested. The entire watershed has very small urban sector or urban land use. It's less than 3% of urban land use within this watershed. Now, what we did was we monitored those outlets, we collected flow, and we collected samples for event samples and base flow samples, and then analyzed for sediments and nutrients. The other part of this research was watershed modeling, and the water quality model, which is annualized agricultural non-point source model, was calibrated and validated. It was calibrated using the data that we had for 2007 and validated for 2008. And AGNIPS is watershed scale distributed parameter model. It's a multi-event modification of single event AGNIPS, which was developed in early 1980s by USDA. The model is capable of estimating loadings by water, sediment, and chemicals, which can be, which is nitrogen, phosphorus, and organic carbon, and it can be estimated at user-specified locations, which can be certain reaches or cell or feedlot or even at farm. Now, the first step, I mean, this model is a very big model. It requires almost 400 input parameters of 34 different categories, and like any other model, this model requires land use data, soil data, DEM of its topographic information, and climate data, which are the most important categories required to run this model successfully. There are several other input variables at the same time that are required. This is one of the watershed, which is on the northeast side of the lake, which is Shotwell Creek watershed. Just to show you the variability of land use and soil within these watershed, and the digital elevation model, and how the model delineates watershed. It uses the simplest D8 algorithm, which is the four-point model. And the first step of generating input variables for the model simulation is DEM processing. And in an effort of doing DEM processing, ANAGNIPS uses topographic parameterization tool, which is built in within the model, which is known as TopAGNIPS. It's Topaz, but since ANAGNIPS uses it, is known as TopAGNIPS. Now, this tool is used to delineate watershed and subwatersheds within these watershed. Now, there is this term known as critical source area. This term has been used by different models in different ways. In this model, critical source area is a threshold area or minimum area required for channel initiation, whereas there are other models which use this terminology in a different way. Critical source area for other models can be contributing source area. So I don't want anybody to get confused with this term here. Critical source area for ANAGNIPS is the threshold area, the minimum area required for channel initiation. And within TopAGNIPS, the combination of critical source area and source channel length, which is the length of the river required for channel initiation. Again, it is all, in a simpler way, it's the length of river that receives the runoff. Now, various combination of critical source area and source channel length were used to delineate sub-watersheds within the model. And the reason that we did was one thing was to test the sensitivity of this, the threshold area. And also, since the model itself is requires such a big input variable and it's extremely time-consuming, we wanted to know if there is a cutoff threshold area which can be used for, you know, future simulation. There hasn't been much work done in this regarding this model. There are other works like SWAT, you know, like the threshold level has been determined for other model, but not for this model yet. So what we did was we chose for all the six sub-watersheds that we had for Skaneateles Lake watershed, we chose critical source area ranging from 0.5% of the total area of the watershed to all the way up to 25% for smaller watersheds and 10% for the larger watershed. So this is just two that I showed, the finest discretization and the coarsest discretization. Whereas we kept source channel length constant. What we did was we actually had separate source channel length also, 50 meter to all the way up to 200 meter changing source channel length. But what we did was we looked only at the number of sub-watersheds delineated. We didn't go further into looking at annual output. So the number of sub-watersheds delineated with change of source channel length wasn't that different from 50 meter to 200 meter. But the number of sub-watersheds delineated from, you know, like 0.5% of the watershed to 10% was, it varied a lot. And this is just to show you that the level of discretization and its impact on the number of watersheds being delineated and also drainage network. What you can see is the drainage network changed drastically from, this is 0.5% of the watershed area, this 1%, and then when it went to 100 hectare, the drainage network reduced drastically, and also the number of cells, number of sub-watersheds and cells being delineated changed. Now, in this model, there is the first delineation is sub-watershed, and based on the land use and soil, it intersects into cell. Like, what it does is it picks dominant land uses and dominant soil, and it calls it cell. So the terminology are very confusing here. The other two watersheds, they're like, I mean, this is just to show the level of discretization and the drainage network that's been produced by threshold area, given threshold area. And this is 1% threshold area discretization. The first attempt was to look at the spatial variability that is produced at different discretization. And based on, but looking at the real watershed map and what is being produced by by changing critical source area, we chose one threshold area and used that number to calibrate the model. And then came back with that calibrated data and then ran through all different critical source area combination to see if there is significant change in annual runoff and sediment load. Now what you could see is these watersheds are forested, these three are forested watersheds, and the chains started plateauing at certain critical source or threshold area. And this is where you can see that plateauing effect, although similar plateauing effect cannot be seen for agricultural watershed. I mean, you can see some level of leveling off, but not as apparent as in case of these watersheds. Now, similar, I mean, in case of the other two watersheds, which is primarily agricultural, the effect was difficult to be seen. And also, what you could see here is the other watersheds also, the sediment load and annual runoff started, I mean, it reduced with coarser discretization, whereas there's this one watershed where the trend could not be observed much. Now, since I mentioned earlier that we all looked at the spatial variability of the real watershed scenario and matched the drainage network with what is existing, that was the first level of identifying critical source area. And it was very difficult for me to come up with the threshold area for this watershed. So, I mean, based on what we observed spatial, I mean, what looked like qualitatively observed on the map, we chose 1% again as the threshold area for these two watershed. Now, the 1 to 2% threshold area does, I mean, there are other models like SWOT, the paper, research done by Benjner, Jha, and Arabi, they have also given similar threshold area, although also the model's different. For this model, I haven't found literature, supporting literature, but this is what I came up with. 1 to 2% threshold area can be the guiding threshold area to delineate watershed, and you know the initial model processing itself will be easier if we have that threshold area defined. Since the model takes awful lot of time, the input data preparation takes extremely, you know, it's rigorous. So this is the threshold area that we recommended. Again, the criteria for choosing this optimal cell size is first qualitatively looking at the map, drainage network, whether your the delineation do match with what is existing, where you're not missing out important channel network, you're not missing out important land use and soil type. And the second is by looking at how the model predicts annual runoff and sediment load and where it starts plateauing. What we saw is the model output was definitely dependent on the level of discretization, which you could see with the finest discretization producing higher runoff and higher sediment load. The reduction rate was as large as 74% for Groutbrook upstream and for sediment load. Whereas similar load reduction was not observed for forested watershed. So maybe the spatial variability within forested watershed is much smaller as opposed to what you see for the agricultural watershed. Again, as I mentioned that landscape heterogeneity is very important in determining cell size and the number of cells. So I conclude here by saying that the threshold critical source area that we came up with was 1 to 2% of the watershed area, and the model prediction was pretty good. We compared that to the measured data for all the watersheds. I mean, it was satisfactory. I wouldn't say it was good. Thank you. Any questions?